This is The Tortoise, the podcast that explores all things slow. I still think I got it wrong, but that's okay.
You changed it.
I said podcast.
You changed it up.
Welcome.
Welcome.
Welcome to you. Happy mornings.
Happy mornings. Here's cheers. Enjoying a delicious morning brown this morning.
Yes. Cup of coffee for those of you who have not seen Auntie Donna.
I would recommend Auntie Donna for those that haven't though.
Ludicrous comedy.
Unbelievable.
Anyway, hope you're well. How are you, Benjamin?
I'm going very well. It's the school holidays.
It is.
So I always love this time of year, this stages of the year, because there's multiple school holidays, but it just breaks up the routine.
For you particularly, I
love
think,
it.
Yeah.
I mean, am I less productive? 100%. But I just love having everyone around me.
Yeah, the mornings are slower.
Definitely slower.
Which is, I think, a nice thing.
Yeah.
Because the kids are at that age now, being in high school, where they're not up at the crack of dawn. So that's nice too. That kind of gives you particularly permission to just take a little bit of extra time in the morning.
Definitely slow mornings.
Yeah.
I'm really liking it. A soft morning.
Oh, nice segue.
Thank you.
Into today's topic.
What do we think about soft living?
Yeah. So first of all, I think that I'm late to this as a trend. I think people have been talking about it on TikTok particularly, which is not my jam. I'm not on TikTok, never have been, so missed that. And it's only when places like The Guardian write about it that I'm even aware of it. So
totally. I saw a few articles on it dated sort of 2022, 2021. I think it might have been like just post-COVID.
Post-lockdowns, yeah.
Like that's where I feel like it really started
took
on
off.
TikTok.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but I saw much the same, quite a lot of articles about it that were from 2021 onwards. Yeah, so I'm late to it and I see a lot of parallels between soft living, self-care and slow living, but for different reasons.
Can we just, first of all, what is this soft living or soft life?
Well, it's actually similar to slow living in that it means something different to everyone.
Yeah.
But if you were to click on hashtag soft life on TikTok or Instagram,
TikTok.
Somewhere, like if you were to explore a social media version of it, it looks a lot like luxe self-care.
Right.
Like there's a lot of luxury attached to it. There's a lot of consumerism attached to it.
Yeah.
It's rooted in really important benefits, like taking time for yourself and settling into what it feels like to experience pleasure and joy personally. But that version, the social media version, is expensive face masks and skincare routines and holidays and, like, you know, days lying next to a pool reading a book. All lovely.
Yeah.
But also all very much one in one, like, silo of what soft living is. So my understanding is that it was started as a trend by a group of Nigerian influencers on TikTok, I think. And it was really as a like a call to action for women, particularly black women, to be able to put down the burdens that they have historically carried and spend time focusing on their own worth and their own care. So in that way, that's what I mean by the parallel between self-care and soft living. Both movements that have really been pioneered by black communities when they've recognized that society at large does not care and that they're on their own and that if you need time for you, you have to carve it out. No one's going to give it to you. No one's going to offer you that. So it's interesting to see that soft living has now followed a similar trajectory to self-care, albeit much faster, where it's being co-opted by
a
mainstream.
Fascinating.
Yeah. So self-care was like the 70s, Black Panthers really brought it to the forefront of social justice movements and
which you wrote about in Care, actually.
I did, yeah. And just to see that pattern of it becoming popularized by wealthier, usually white people, and now to the point where self-care is almost like a parody of itself now. Like people use it as a like a sarcastic way of kind of pointing out privilege, which I bothers me as well because self-care is important. Mm. And soft living has almost gone, it's going that way as well. It's really been co-opted by wealthy people, often white people, who are, you know, we don't know what it is to carry the burdens that the people who started this movement in the first place bear. We just don't. So I just find it interesting, and I think it's important to kind of highlight at the beginning, because the roots of these movements aren't in the realities of my life, that's for sure.
No. And looking at soft life online, the connection between the recent quiet quitting movement is huge. Like they're like almost one in the same. And I've seen a lot of posts, Instagram posts, I think, of women. Yeah, largely women. What are men? Anyway, that's another.
I would love to follow that down the rabbit hole.
Yeah, but I just want to quickly just make this distinction where I'm seeing a lot of privileged people using like working from home and like quiet quitting, like closing the laptop, you know, at 2 o'clock and then going and getting like a facial done or like having a bath. And I mean, that's my observation of it. That's where I've seen it. Like quiet quitting / soft life. It are people that are, it's just so staged.
Right. And that's it. So I'm going to push way back on what you're saying. I get it. And if, like I said, if you were to be only exploring the idea of soft living or slow living or self-care, whatever, through that social media lens, that's what it is, right? But the vast majority of people, I think, who are drawn to the idea of it are, sure, there's aspirations, you know, of being able to take a day off and go to the spa or, you know, take a week off and go on a holiday or have a house that has a pool so you can sit beside it and read a book, whatever. There are levels of aspiration to it, but the majority of people, I think, it appeals to them because they are so overworked, because they are so exhausted and overwhelmed and a bit done. You know, so that I like that it's almost like a blunt instrument of soft living. So it's showing you like the most blunt, obvious way that it could look in your life. And that's what's cutting through for people because they're like, oh my God. Give me an afternoon where I don't have to do anything.
Where I need to check out. I can check out.
Yeah. So I actually think that there's not a lot of correlation or a lot of relationship between quiet quitting and soft living. I think that I completely understand.
That's just the algorithm that exactly. social media served up to me.
Yeah. I think that much like slow living, it's a lot of hard work to design and intentionally create a life that works for you, whatever that looks like, you know, and that leaves you feeling cared for or nourished or energized or, you know, filled up in a way that then allows you to go back out into the world and do good. And I think that's what the majority of people are really looking for. Yes, I'm sure there's some people who are looking for, like, where's the off switch? I'm done. I'm out. Give me all the luxury, please. But I think most people don't really want to disappear into that cloud of luxuriousness forever. Most people are like, I want to help. I want to do good. I want to show up. I want to live fully in the world, but I can't do that when I'm running on empty. So, you know, I think maybe that's what people are looking for without knowing that that's what they're looking for.
So if I was to say to you, what is soft living for you, what would you, how would you sort of describe it?
So
how would you describe it and what distinction would you make between that and slow living?
That's a good point. So first of all, I think I started to understand soft living when I realized what it wasn't. So what's the opposite of soft?
Hard.
Right. So when you think about hard living, what do you think?
Labor.
Right. So heavy labor, emotional toil.
Drinking too much.
Exactly. That's the other, like
excessive.
Partying, not treating your body very well. Yeah. So not sleeping enough, not doing any self-care, you know, going out, drinking.
Burning the candle at both ends.
Exactly. So they're all things that I have done in my past that I would definitely classify as hard, like fun as anything, but hard.
Is it fun? It's not fun for me.
It's fun
now.
At the time.
Yeah, okay.
And that's
yeah.
why it no longer is what I do because yeah. it's not fun anymore. But also, you know, it was a moment in time.
Mm-hmm.
So hard living is all those things. Soft is the opposite to that. And I didn't realize that that was what I was dragging my life towards bit by bit and decision by decision until I started thinking about this topic of soft living. But it is like not drinking. It's sleeping 8 hours a night. It's prioritizing things like rest and nutritious food and things that are genuine self-care for me. So quiet time. You know, time spent outside, time spent alone, allowing myself to not feel shame about wanting those things anymore, because that was sort of the transition between hard and soft living, I think, was partly feeling like there was something wrong with me for wanting those things. It's increasingly about joy as well. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's going to prove to be a really kind of pivotal idea for me as I shift into whatever is coming is joy. Because I think without joy, if we are joyless, as a lot of people are, myself included, a lot of the time, and I certainly have been, we're really easy targets when we have no joy.
Yeah.
Like we can be sold virtually anything
mm.
when we're joyless.
Mm.
We can be told all the ways in which we're flawed, all the ways in which our life sucks, all the ways in which the world is doomed, all yep. the ways in which everyone is now horrible. And the divisions in the world are enormous. Like we can be sold all of that in a joyless state. And I think that reclaiming and recentering joy in real ways is probably one of the biggest ways that I'm sort of shifting into a softer way of living. A gentler way of living might feel better to say. I don't know. But when I have
that's really
that,
interesting. Yep.
Like when I've got that joy in the center of it all, suddenly I feel like I'm allowed to find delight in things. And when I find delight in things, that becomes like a habit. That becomes a pattern of behavior. And over time, I'm becoming less and less likely to be sold on things.
Mm.
You can't manipulate me nearly as easily as you could have a year ago. You know, I don't buy into a lot of the current narratives about the world being like going to shit and everyone being horrible and no one understands each other anymore, because that's kind of just one version of the world, right? That's the social media version. The real life version is different. So yeah, I think things that energize me, things that bring joy, things that are simple and allowing them to be all those things is probably what soft looks like for me.
Wow, that's awesome.
That was a big answer.
It was good though. Very enlightening. For me, the difference between that I could see from my and limited amount of research that I did on it, but I did read a few articles on it and reflecting on what slow living is. So I see slow living as very...
Sorry, slow or soft?
I'm still talking about slow. Slow. I'm okay. Trying to make the distinction
yeah.
for me, and it won't be for everyone. But slow is, for me, is like inwardly focused. It's like journaling, and it's like getting your headspace right and like slowing, like, you know, obviously just slowing down, taking stock, recalibrating. I feel like it's always or internally focused.
Huh, okay.
Where one of the big things that I saw with soft living is this almost cry for help, as in like don't be afraid to ask for help. People encourage you to ask for help because you might be like, as you were saying, like burdened, broke,
mm-hmm.
You know, mentally not right. Like just the weight of the world is mm-hmm. just too much. And you can do your slow work, which is like all internally focused. But what they're saying is like, you need to allow yourself to be vulnerable. You need to ask and then accept help. Which I would find incredibly hard.
Yeah, we
like
were talking
really,
about that.
Really, really hard. So that's what I read and mm-hmm. that's what I got out of it is that, you know, instead of that inwardly focused, it's all about like seeking help, not seeing and not even viewing it even remotely as a sign of weakness.
Right.
But rather a sign of this is the way you're supposed to behave as a human.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, opportunity to build relationships, being vulnerable and authentic with someone that you hadn't previously. Like, that's just another layer of a building on a relationship. And then you can learn new skills on how to cope with things. You know, like, it's quite collaborative.
Interesting. Yeah, it's really interesting the way you, like, differentiate between the two.
But everything else I can see is very similar.
Yeah.
Like 90% of the stuff I think is, from what I've read, is just, to me, is slow living.
Yeah, and that speaks to like the bastardization of slow living as well, I think, because it has over time become another trend, another aesthetic, another set of Joneses to keep up with, you know, and slow living has become synonymous with people who are, if not rich, then at least comfortable, affluent, who they have the time and the capacity and the space to do things like bake bread or, you know, have a garden or walk their kids to school or, you know, go shopping for matching linen outfits. I don't know. Like, you know, it's kind of become an aesthetic rather than a mindset, a way of life, a way forward. And I think soft living seems to be much the same. And I think that's one of the biggest criticisms of soft living is that it is consumerist driven. And that's one of the, immediately. So you came out, like you started reading about it and you came out and described soft living as something that made me laugh. What did you say?
Oh God, I can't remember.
Oh, can't you? No. It was great. You said it's like treat yourself at home.
Yes, that's right. Tommy Haverford off Parks and Rec. Yeah. Treat yourself.
At home.
At home.
So buy all the things.
Yeah.
But enjoy them at home.
At home.
It's not like, it's not flamboyant for the sake of others. It's flamboyance for the sake of yourself, but it's still flamboyance, you know, like it's still extravagant.
Yeah.
But in saying that, I think it's interesting that that's one of the biggest pushbacks on soft living when it is often driven by women and often, even more often by women of color, that like that's what people come for. There's a lot of other types of lifestyles that are just as, if not way more consumerist driven.
Oh, yeah.
And people don't come for them.
Yeah.
Like, are people coming in droves for like the boys with their sports cars? And like, no.
Yeah.
You know, so I understand the pushback on that because I'm not big on consumerism, but I'm also not going to go after it for that reason.
For the sake,
because I said, the burdens, the histories, the, you know, the cultural journeys, they're not mine, so I'm not going to, you know, put things down that I don't understand.
Yeah
But I think when it applies to me, if I'm applying the idea of soft living to me as my own lens through which to look at things, I'd just say, well, you know, what are we looking for when we're going out to buy stuff? Like, are we looking for the idea of success, or are we looking for the idea of, you know, treating yourself, or am I looking for self-worth or acceptance, or like, have I made it, you know? And what are other ways we can explore those feelings as well? Yeah. I think the idea of success is very much wrapped up in all of it, to the point where you almost have to have a certain level of success before you're able...
And then burn out.
Yeah, well, yes. But before you're able to then experience soft living in that way. And I don't like anything that is gatekept.
No.
See it challenge you a lot. I feel like you're challenged by this idea.
You know what I'm challenged about, and it's something that I raised earlier, and we're going to come back to it right now, is men and soft living.
Mm-hmm.
What, men and slow living?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you could hazard a guess on the profile of your audience who's listening to this podcast, what would you guess?
By far, the majority is women. And I'd say, just anecdotally from people who send me emails or from whatever data I used to be able to get about the podcast and newsletter and stuff, probably 30 plus years old.
30 plus years old.
Skewing more towards like 40s.
Yep.
So like roughly our our age. I know that's not everyone.
And a percentage, a ratio of men versus women?
Almost all women.
95%? 99%? I'd say
like 90% maybe.
Okay.
It's hard to tell though because most people who listen or who read are silent.
Yeah.
You know, they don't interact at all, which is fine because that's me as well whenever I listen or read listen to things or read things. So I don't know exactly. But I, as a movement, on the whole, I think women are far more engaged with the idea of slow living than men.
Because do they need it?
Yes.
More?
Yes.
Yeah. And do you think men feel embarrassed to have adopted slow or soft living?
Yes.
I do as well. Yeah. I think that's basically what I was sort of getting at, is it's embarrassing because the world and society and all the systems are all designed with men in mind.
Yeah. Well, it's patriarchal, right?
Yeah. So little wonder that I don't see any men sort of write about it or champion it, or very little, because it's just not set up. I don't know why I've just come to this realization. It might be extremely obvious, but I just have not.
But that's okay. Like,
yeah.
It's not a realization until you come to it. Like, you can be told the same thing, you know, but until it makes sense to you, then it's surface level, surface noise.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that there is...
And I was going to say...
Yeah, sorry.
Because when we used to do... record the podcast...
The Slow Home.
The Slow Home podcast, and we'd go out and we'd do talks and book events. The question we'd get asked every single event we attended is, how do I get my husband on board with this?
Yep.
Whether it's slow living...
Decluttering,
all that sort of stuff. And I'm wondering whether it's because they feel like they're not worth it, or they're not... They're embarrassed, like they're... I don't... Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
Like, I really think that there is an element to that with some people, not everyone.
I know. And I'm trying to not speak in generalization, but that's just, I'm just observing.
Yeah. From your, like, sphere, that's what you see.
Yeah.
And also really important to highlight that we're looking at things from, like, a heteronormative perspective.
Yeah, sorry.
So, but it's fine. It's still valid. It's just one of many valid perspectives. Yeah, I think that there's definitely an element of self-worth. So generally speaking, I think that women are better equipped to move through these questions, partly because we have to, because, again, generally speaking, the emotional labor burden, the mental load burden is really still heavily on women. Like there was a article that came out during the week that said, talking about how leisure time in Australian households is split up, and just looking at a two-adult household, male and female, men have on average an hour extra leisure time a day than women. And even if women are full-time employed or main breadwinner, they're still doing more housework than men on average. So, you know, that's a very, again, another blunt instrument, but proves why the idea of slow living, of simplifying, of becoming more values aligned and like letting some of the stuff go is so appealing to women. And I don't think it's that it's not appealing to men. It's that, as you say, they don't feel like it's appropriate because it's not successful.
Nice word.
You know, because still most people hear slow and they think lazy.
Yeah.
They think unambitious.
Unambitious, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't. I think it's the opposite.
Checked out.
Yep. Disengaged, all of that. Yeah. And I think it's the opposite of that.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
Easy, right? And people are like, well, but we're meant to strive. We're meant to grind. We're meant to hustle. Slow is the opposite of those. Yes, it is, but it's not easy.
Life is hustling. Life is strive. Like, no life is without those.
Without struggle?
Yeah.
Of course not. Yeah. It's just questioning which ones are worth it. And I don't think a lot
Which
of people...
Which ones that matter?
Yeah, I don't think a lot of people have ever been empowered to even think about that question, let alone ask it, let alone answer it.
I'm wondering whether men will come to the table and be more willing to look at it as... I'm just thinking about in light of mental health and the encouragement and all, you know, all the programs and systems in place to have men talk about their feelings and be authentic and engage with other men on problems and issues and verbalize them. And like, that's a huge movement that's happened.
Yep.
And I'm wondering whether some of this other stuff, soft, slow, will eventually make its way into that, into the vocabulary.
I mean, I certainly think it has. Like, it's not to say that men never read my words.
Isn't men just so much slower in the uptake?
Well, yeah, and you got to think about why that is, right? Because it's only now that some people are starting to realize, ah, this system that's set up that has benefited, on the whole, men for a very long time is actually not benefiting the majority of people. Doesn't matter your gender. So patriarchy, like the whole patriarchal system is collapsing in on itself, and more people are going, oh, this doesn't actually serve any of us very well. Like, we talk about, you know, the mental health of men, and it's because of the patriarchal system where it's, you know, certain traits are lauded and certain traits are pitied, and like, that's the reason why men for so long struggled to talk about their feelings and emotions, and that if they did, they'd be called a woman, you know, as if that was a put down, whereas women actually have an emotional intelligence born of generations of women gradually talking more and more about how they feel and why and working through it. So, yeah, yes, like, men might be slower to pick this stuff up, but it's because the system has for a lot longer served them generally better. And now it's like, oh, this is not working. Like, why are so many men having such terrible health, mental health issues? Why are so many men committing suicide? Like, why are so many men acting out with horrific violence against women and partners and children? You know, why is that happening? We need to think broadly and look at what you were talking about, which is like people feeling a lack of value and worth. And then, of course, there's the counter argument to that, which is the anti-feminism movement, which is like, well, if women would stop belittling men, then they wouldn't feel so bad about themselves. That's not the answer.
I'm not talking about that.
But you know, I know that people listening would say, well, this is what some people come back with.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so I know you only wanted to talk about slow living, but it's not, you can't just pull one thread and have it come out cleanly. Like, it's all knotted up in there, I think. And it's, I think it's why, not just men, it's not a gendered thing any, that I'm talking about anymore. Like, that, you know, the threads that we've talked about today, like self-worth and success and joy and manipulation, like, they're all tied together. And I think getting closer to the center of that knot is why I'm still writing and talking about slow living. Because, like, really, the last couple of years, I'm like, why am I still doing this?
Yeah.
What ground could I possibly have to cover anymore? 10, 13 years in.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
You've been writing about this for 13 years.
Since the kids were babies. Yeah.
Wow.
It didn't start out specifically like that, but, you know, that was where it began.
Yeah.
So why am I still doing it? Because I think the more I uncover about myself and about the world and about what slow could offer, the more I see the need for it. You know, it was very surface level for a long time. It was like, you know, declutter your home and you'll feel better. And not, it's not not true, but it's also maybe not.
It's the first step on the heart step of it. To Everest.
Yeah. So I think that there's something deeper at the core of all these movements, some reason why people keep coming back to it. People keep reinventing
the words,
it.
Yeah. Rephrase the terms.
Because we want to get closer to the to some more intentional way of living, maybe something that feels a bit more real or vulnerable or authentic, to overuse an overused word. But
do you think those Nigerian women that started soft living are happy where it is at the moment?
I've got no idea. Yeah. I don't know. I'm not engaged with it as a trend at all, like as a social media trend.
And slow living, like being co-op. I'm just trying to think of a minority, even like music, like jazz, rock, like you think about it, it's been co-opted.
Sure, of course, yeah.
And
First it was ridiculed, and then it was like begrudgingly going, okay, I guess this is pretty good. And then it was like, you know.
Taken over. Yeah. Like owned.
Yep. Yeah, it happens over and over and over again. Not just in movements or trends. It's like you said, it's music, like everything. Fashion, everything. Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah, so I don't know. I can't put myself in their position, but I can't imagine it would feel very good to see it become, to see it widely mean something other than what they had
your
wanted
your intention
it
was in
to.
The first
yeah,
place.
But
because it loses its, yeah, with every hashtag it loses its origin story.
Yeah, I mean the nuance is knocked out of things over time as it becomes mainstream because it has to then be simplified down to a soundbite or to a hashtag or to, you know, something they can talk about on the news for 2 minutes. Like, how do we make it mean something in that constrained space? You take away all the nuance, you take away all of the roots of it, and then it just becomes another trend.
Yeah.
So it's not dissimilar to many lifestyle trends, like minimalism or, again, self-care or simplicity or tiny house living. Like
van life.
Yeah, van life, all that stuff. It started out as a countercultural movement and became mainstream. And as it becomes mainstream, it stops losing. It loses what it was. Like hippies would be the same, you know, the original hippies very different to what passes off as like hippie living now.
Yeah.
But there's also benefit to things becoming mainstream because maybe they challenge people to think about things just a little bit differently if they're inclined to. Most of the time you come across a trend, you're like, oh, there you go, there's a thing, that's a thing, and you don't think about it anymore. But maybe sometimes some people will go, what's that all about?
Yeah, yeah. I know this is off topic, but
feel like we've been mostly off topic.
Yeah, this is now just moving on to weird things. But I just want to talk about minimalism for a sec. Mm. And, you know, the minimalist decor and, you know, Scandinavian in origins.
Yep.
But now there's a huge movement about, like, cluttered bookshelves.
Maximalism.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know. Maximalism is in.
Mm. Yeah, some people think it's like a response to the austerity almost of COVID.
Yeah.
So
the scarcity and mindset.
Yeah. Yeah. So after the Spanish flu, there was like a, I guess in the 20s, there was this whole movement towards partying and like living large as a result of the global pandemic that killed millions of people. And to some extent, that's what like more flamboyant, extravagant, and possibly ideas like soft living, but like the luxurious version of it are in response to. Mm. It's people trying to balance out what feels like just such a loss and a lack for a few years. I think it's obviously it's very different to the roaring 20s. It's dampened by a cost of living crisis, you know, multiple wars happening around the world, people really feeling the pinch. So it's different, but that swing around to maximalism is possibly people kind of just reclaiming joy out of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And I only read about it in relation to like bookshelves.
Right.
And like cluttered bookshelves, like, so not orderly books stacked on top of one another in weird ways, and plants and like statues and trinkets and other stuff on the bookshelves as well, and realized we've got bookshelves like that.
We do definitely not.
We are maximalists.
Well, when it comes to books and plants, I would agree with that.
Maximalists.
sure
yeah.
But, I mean, minimalism is another example of something that went absolutely crazy as a trend.
Yeah.
where everyone was getting rid of everything and living in white empty boxes because it was an aesthetic.
Mm.
It was a trend that was, you know, it was nice. Like it sort of started with the idea of decluttering and simplifying and like finding peace and calm in your space. I get that. I was all on board. And then it became the minimalism bros who were competing on how few items of like belongings that they could have. And there was a guy who only lived with what he had in his backpack. And then there was another guy who like had a 100 item challenge. And even me, who was, I was in.
Remember the declutter 20,000
items? 20,000 items. But that was like.
20,000 items.
We got rid of 20,000 items in a like the space of a year. Yeah. But even that, that didn't leave our house bare. You know, it left our house with enough. We had enough. And like more than enough. So it was sort of, I was in on the idea of simplifying. But when minimalism again got taken.
Is that
taken,
cringy to look back on?
No.
No.
I still maintain that the idea of simplifying the way that we did made our lives so much easier, yeah. But not in ways that were Instagram friendly. It just in like mental load. The lightening of my mental load was enormous. And I still declutter. Like it's just part of life now. First day of the school holidays. I go into the kids' rooms, we do their wardrobes.
Yeah.
We go through the house, we just let go of anything that we don't need. You know, I have no cringe about that. Had I gone further down the track of minimalism, I would 100% cringe about it because I'm like, I don't have a can opener. You know?
I have to buy cans with those flip.
Yeah. Why don't I have more than one pair of shoes? Like it would be annoying.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But again, there's lessons. There were lessons in that. That I'm glad I learned.
Mm.
And the there was also the lesson that all of these movements, excuse me, all of these movements get co-opted eventually and they have to be stripped down to a very simple like motto or, you know, byline that can be put on the front of a book or you know, spoken about on the news.
Yeah.
You know, it's just the, I don't know, dumbing down of complex ideas. All of these ideas are complex and as a result, you probably shouldn't be getting your guidance of them from social media because social media doesn't have nuance by design.
Nice. Well, that wraps up that part of the episode. I wanted to ask you if you've got, first of all, if you've got anything else to say about that.
I do actually.
Well done, Ben.
I think it's important to think like how can we adopt the ideas of soft living?
Thank you for getting practical. I like this. Yes.
So like what ways are we able to remove some of the fluff from it, you know, from the, what it looks like and focusing on how it feels? And you already mentioned like asking for help.
It's asking for help for me. Like that's what I'm taking away from soft living
mm-hmm.
is the being able to and willing and authentic enough, vulnerable enough to ask for help in lots of different ways.
Mm-hmm. So I was going to say boundaries, but I feel like you've kind of almost developed like you're suggesting an anti-boundary.
Yeah.
Like opening up. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Opening up a part of you that had been too boundaried, maybe.
Too inwardly focused.
Yeah. That's really interesting.
What about for you?
So boundaries, I think, are important.
The opposite.
No.
It's completely the opposite.
But I had never considered asking for help as part of soft living.
Okay.
So
okay. Yeah.
I think that that's a really important one and I agree with you.
Yeah.
I think we're both hyper independent in that sense that we won't necessarily ask for help even when we need it.
Yeah, totally.
You know, and that's a trait that we both have. And I think challenging that and being open and gentle with what we learn from that could be a really good thing. So I agree with you. But I think in terms of developing a softer, gentler life, you know, that feels softer and gentler for ourselves, we also need to develop boundaries around our time and our energy and our attention. So things like our use of technology, things like carving out time for things that will feel good after we've done them, and just sticking to it, like having enough belief in the power of going for a walk to ignore the voice. It's like, oh my God, it's cold. I don't want to go for a walk. Mm. So I won't go for a walk. Mm. Ignore that voice. Just have enough momentum, have enough belief, have enough self-worth to ignore it. Go for the walk, you know? So the boundaries are also ones that will not allow us to talk ourselves out of things, that will help us to feel cared for. I do think that being mindful of what we consume as well is really helpful. Like yes, stuff, obviously, but also the newspapers we read or the news that we watch or the social media platforms that we're part of or not part of, like how taking time to audit how those things make you feel and asking yourself whether or not they have a place in...
Excuse me, I'm just going to go and get a coffee for
another coffee, a top up. Yeah, just questioning whether they have a place in the sort of life we're trying to build. I think that increasingly, as I've... bit of ASMR for you. Thank you. Increasingly, as I've started centering joy, almost accidentally, but really importantly as part of my... Are you making that loud on purpose?
Yeah. I'm so sorry.
That's quite all right. Thank you for the coffee. You've brought me great joy. I think centering joy as part of, you know, this new gentler life has really forced me to reflect on what the information I consume has been doing to my well-being. And I am reading way less news. I am not on any social media with the exception of Substack, where it's pretty quiet and nice. People are kind, typically. And my mental health is better. I'm able to better find pockets of joy every day without any of that. And just coming to terms with what that means about what I used to think being a good, successful person was, like it was being hyper-informed. I'm not any less informed now. I'm just able to be informed with like a step of distance from information to my emotions. They used to be one and the same, and now they're not. And I benefit enormously from that. Can you relate to that?
I can definitely see that.
Can you?
Yeah, that's been a massive observation of my, like, I remember I always knew when you just read the news.
Yeah.
And like your attitude shifted.
Mm-hmm.
You got so angry.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I don't know whether this was an influence on you, but me saying that like even news, there's agendas like from the writers, from the publishers, from the owners of the news outlets. Like there's agendas everywhere. And you need to like have that in the back of your mind before you start reading things.
Yeah. It certainly helped. Yeah. But also just truly reflecting on the fact that like asking myself what I want in my life, what do I want to bring to the world, you know, and then recognizing that spending a huge chunk of my time either absorbing information, consuming information, or dealing with the fallout of that information emotionally.
Yeah.
What meant I couldn't do most of what I want to be able to do with my, at the moment, very limited energy and capacity.
Mm.
So that's that paired with, you know, just recognizing that, yeah, everyone, every piece of information that is put out into the world, subconsciously or otherwise, has an agenda attached to it. And I don't need to consume all of that. That's been huge for me. And then I think rituals, like going back to soft living.
Yep.
Thinking about some rituals, some tiny moments in our day that we can create to give us that feeling of softness or care or even luxury, but not necessarily luxury in a price tag sense. Like for me, sitting in bed with you, having a cup of coffee before we get up, being in school holidays, we can do that.
Yeah.
That feels like luxury. Like it really does. So finding little moments throughout the day that can feel like that. I've spoken about this one before and it's such a weird little ritual, but especially in winter, I love getting up in the morning and opening the curtains. That brings me genuine joy. I don't know why. It just feels like a positive welcoming of the day, you know. Going for walks, like just bookending the day with a short walk. Sitting, finding a sunny spot and sitting in that sunny spot to eat lunch or read a book for 5 minutes or talk.
Yeah.
Just, you know, really working to find those moments of softness, I think can help. Do you have rituals?
I do. I just want to, just an observation. I'm looking over your right shoulder at two, I think they're magpies.
Currawongs.
Currawongs. Mm-hmm. They are currawongs. Just sharing a fig from our tree.
Mm-hmm.
And they're feeding like their juvenile who's just flown away, but they were sharing it with them as well.
Yeah, I've gotten so much joy out of the fig tree and the currawongs this summer.
Yeah. It's amazing. They're going bite for bite.
Yeah.
They're sharing it.
Yeah.
Enjoy it because it's not ripe enough for us to eat. Rituals. Yeah, one of the other reasons why I love school holidays is, yeah, just to be able to, those slow mornings, being able to enjoy a cup of coffee in bed without making lunches is really nice. Mm. I know that won't last forever, like
that's okay,
beyond the next week or so, but it's just lovely. Yeah, I have rituals. Like I guess like exercising and working out, that's like a ritual that I do and really greatly benefit from physically and mentally.
Yeah.
I have a ritual of every once a month sitting down and having a men's table.
Mm-hmm.
So sharing stories with multi-generational men in the community. And that's a ritual that I really look forward to and like. I probably don't have the small rituals that you're talking about, like the really like, they're almost minuscule parts of your day.
They are. Yeah. They'd be so easy to overlook.
And if I do, I don't process them like that, like rituals. Yeah.
Like even closing all the programs on my computer and shutting my computer down at the end of the day, that's massive for me.
Turning the lights out of my office and closing the door is important.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I mean, I wonder whether or not that's tied into some of what you were talking about earlier. It's like that's woo, you know, that's woo-woo
totally.
Stuff.
Yeah.
That couldn't possibly have any bearing on my work or my sense of success or worth. I don't know. It's like slow living has a branding problem.
Nice. Right about that.
Sure.
The next tortoise post. I wanted to come to you if you finished.
Yes.
With your
go on.
Notes there. I know you've just got a few notes there that I just want to make sure you finish with. But before we like end the episode, I wanted to talk about, we'd recorded the last two episodes longer, like ages ago.
Ages
like I feel
ago.
Like we haven't done this for
3 months.
Months and months, which it has been.
Yeah.
Because of operations you've had, your recovery. I just wanted to ask you a question on whether you're willing to share how that is going.
Good. Like I have posted a couple of brief updates to the tortoise. So if you haven't subscribed to the tortoise or you don't know what it is, it's just my newsletter community over on Substack. So you can head over there in the show notes. There'll be a link to see what I'm talking about. But in short, the operation went as well as these operations go, which is great. The recovery for the first couple of weeks was pretty good, and then I had some pretty scary complications.
While I was interstate.
Yeah.
Which was...
I had my sister staying here, one of my sisters staying here, thank God, but...
Scary.
Wasn't ideal for you, that's for sure. Yeah, so that really did take a lot out of me and put my recovery back by several weeks. I'm going to say I'm at like 50%. Yeah. So, you know, it's nice that I have the capacity to sit here and have this conversation, and I've been going for walks again, which is really nice. I've been doing a little bit of writing, trying to find myself back on the page, which has been brilliant. It's one of those things that I don't quite remember how important it is until it gets taken away from me for a while. Yeah, so I'm still trying to work out answers to questions that we've had for quite a few years, and hopefully we're getting closer to that. But we'd definitely encourage anyone who's got any concerns about their health to just go to the doctor and talk to them, because, you know, it's important.
Yeah.
One day I will talk about the whole shebang, but for now I can't, because I don't have
words,
language yet around it. And that's spending too long in the what ifs and the maybes is very detrimental to my health. So, you know, in general terms, I'm on the improve from my operation and hopeful that this year will
narrow down,
answer a lot of questions. Yeah. Yeah.
What has been a I'm going to say a 4-year journey.
Five-year
journey, which...
So hats off to anyone listening who's dealing with their own chronic health conditions. It's rough. I salute you. Yeah, so on that positive note...
Sorry, I just wanted to make sure that, people were across what was happening and...
Yeah, my
and
hope...
And the interruptions that have happened.
Yes. Yeah. So my writing has not been as consistent as it normally would be this term. I stopped posting. I stopped all payments and everything probably 6 weeks ago, just as much as anything to remove any additional pressure off me, because I feel that very deeply when people have expectations of getting my words in their inbox every week and I can't do that. I feel that really deeply, that pressure.
Yeah.
So to just communicate clearly, you know, that I couldn't was helpful to me. Like, it just drew a line in the sand or created a boundary for me to not continue to put energy that I didn't have into something that I could control. But my plan moving forward for the coming term, so as most of you probably know, I write 2 school terms, so roughly 4 10-week blocks a year. Just means I can take regular breaks, which has always been helpful to me. The next term I'm planning to get back to my regular schedule of Thursday letters to your inbox, and they will be loosely themed to the theme of rebellious living.
Oh!
Yeah, which I'm actually really excited about. Like countercultural.
Don't waste your midlife crisis.
Don't waste your midlife crisis.
That was a doozy question that Brooke asked me when we were going for a walk last night. That has shaken me to my core.
You know, I've had a lot of people over the years ask me about living counterculturally, you know, swimming against the tide, operating outside the status quo, and how to do it, like how to stand in that, but also how to not burn out from that. So that's kind of the theme that I want to explore over the next 10 weeks over on At the Tortoise. So if that interests you and you haven't yet subscribed, you can do that. You can head over to brookmccallery.substack.com, sign up there, and you'll get a letter every Thursday, all things going well over the coming weeks. And then there is also an option to become a paying supporter, and those paying supporters get Sunday letters as well as some access to some retreats and workshops that I've run previously. So, yeah. But to everyone who's listening who already is subscribed, thank you. It means a huge amount to have this community of like-minded people growing. It's really bolstered my spirits over the last couple of months. And without you, I don't know that I would have come back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So thank you, truly.
Thank you. I just also wanted to ask a question,
mm-hmm.
To our listeners, whether they would be interested in watching us record this podcast. So a vodcast.
Okay.
Whether we do that over at the Tortoise as like member only or
okay.
throw it up on YouTube. I don't know. Like I've been working on vodcasts with a few clients and have liked the process. And I'm just wondering, and it may get us to dress not in our tracksuit pants.
How rude.
I'm sorry. but whether that would be
very glamorous.
Of interest. I don't know whether it would be, whether people prefer the passive, like we'd never stop doing a podcast, but whether people would be interested in a vodcast. I don't know. I just feel like that's the way podcasts are moving. Like there's a lot of.
Yeah, there is.
Like recording like with video. Like, yep. And I don't listen to podcasts that way, but.
Me either.
Maybe people do. But I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's worth asking. So if you've listened to the end, thank you. And you have an opinion either way on video podcasts, yes or no, just let me know in the
show notes, and over at the Tortoise.
Yeah, the show notes over at the Tortoise. So again, just brookmccallery.substack.com and just hit the podcast tab. And you'll find today's episode, which is, I think, what, episode 13? 14?
14.
14.
Yeah, something like that.
We've been doing this for more than a year.
Wowzers.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's a better note to end on. Thank you. I hope you're well. I hope you enjoy the rest of your day, wherever you are and whatever you're up to. And, thank you for listening. And thank you, Ben, for talking to me.
Thank you.
See ya.